Well, here is someone that way. Oh, well, this is interesting. There, that's where I want to be. Yeah, I hope you're laughing at the mistake and not the picture. Well, here is someone you may recognize, someone that you may, well, maybe you don't recognize it. Well, at least you'll recognize the headgear. If you've ever been to a fancy restaurant, you know that's what the serviettes look like. That's how they, you know, so maybe that you recognize the headgear. But in case you don't know who you're looking at, this is in fact Justin Welby. He is the Archbishop, the boss of the Anglican Church. And he's been in the news lately because he issued a very controversial statement. Here's what, well, actually he didn't issue it. The Anglican Church issued it. I'll get to what he said just now. The Anglican Church said this. This is about 2 weeks ago. For Christians, marriage, that is, the lifelong union between a man and a woman, contracted with the making of vows, remains the proper context for sexual activity. How controversial is that? How outrageous is that? For a secular society, a statement like that is just outrageous. The church said that sex is for a man and a woman in lifelong marriage. It's outrageously controversial. In our secular society, sex is for one thing only, pleasure. And faith and sex have got nothing to do with each other. God doesn't get to say what I do with my sex life. That's how our secular society thinks. And so for the church to come out and say that sex ought to be for a husband and a wife and a marriage is just narrow, bigoted, outdated. In fact, it could even be considered hate speech. But the Anglican Church said it. And so what do you think the Archbishop should do? When that statement came out, there was controversy. And so what do you think the Archbishop should do? Should he stand his ground? Should he say, well, yeah, well, he has an option. He could say something like this, well, people, I understand this makes you upset. But I want to point out that the Bible teaches God made man and woman. God designed sex with a purpose, with a purpose. It's to make the two one. Sex is not just for pleasure. It is pleasurable. It's not just for that. It's in fact for God. It's designed by him. Should the Archbishop say that? Or should the Archbishop say something like this? Yes, I know that goes against what you feel. I'm sorry for that. But Jesus is very clear. All sexual activity outside of heterosexual marriage is adultery. It's unacceptable to God. God loves you. It's not good for you. It won't lead to your flourishing. Should he say that? Is that? Well, here's what he did. The Archbishop, instead of standing his ground, absolutely caved in. He collapsed. And you know what he did last week? He issued a formal apology. Here's what he said. We apologize for releasing a statement last week which jeopardized trust. We are very sorry. We recognize the division and hurt that this has caused. This man apologized. Get this. He said sorry that Christians believe that sex is for a man and a woman in marriage. He apologized for that. He said, sorry. Isn't that extraordinary? There is only one word to describe what he did, and it is the word ashamed. In the face of opposition, in the face of secular society's backlash, he was ashamed of Jesus and ashamed of the Bible and ashamed of what Jesus teaches. Ashamed does not just mean embarrassed, you know. Ashamed means more than embarrassed. It means being scared. It means being not prepared to stand your ground in the face of opposition. Ashamed means not being not prepared to receive ridicule or opposition. The temptation to be ashamed of Jesus and his words in our intolerant society, there's nothing worse than a liberal bigot. In our society, we are completely intolerant of different views. Absolutely intolerant. And therefore, the temptation to withdraw and be ashamed of what the Bible clearly teaches is huge. And it's not just sex. It's not just sex. Every time Jesus goes against my desires and what I want, be it sex, or be it greed, or be it lying, or be it exploitation, or environmental, whatever. Whenever the Bible goes against what I want, the temptation to be ashamed of what Jesus says is huge. He knows this, and this is why Jesus said this. Right, Cam, you're going to have to take over here. For whoever is ashamed of me and of my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, of him will the Son of Man also be ashamed when he comes in the glory of his Father with the holy angels. Jesus said this because he knows in a wicked and adulterous generation, in a society that is opposed to God, obviously we're going to cop it when we stand by his words. And there'll be a great temptation to be ashamed. Or have a look at the next verse. Therefore, Paul writes to Timothy, do not be ashamed of the testimony about our Lord, nor of me, his prisoner. But, wow, what happens if you're not ashamed? What's going to happen to you? Look, share in suffering for the gospel by the power of God. If you're determined to be unashamed of the gospel and Jesus' words, you're going to suffer for it. You're going to cop it. You're going to be called horrible names. Now, all of us feel this way. Don't feel you're a bad Christian when you're tempted to hold back. It's normal temptation. You know, I take our dog for a walk at the local park, and the dog runs around, and I bump into other people. And as we're chatting, you know, I'm going to be honest with you. I know that at some point I'm having such a nice conversation. I like this person, and they like me, and we have dogs in common, you know. And, well, they're not my dogs, but that's another subject. But I know at some point they're going to say, so, what do you do? Oh. And in the back of my mind, there's a little voice that says, please don't ask, because we're getting on fine. And I don't want to say, I teach about Jesus, because then it's going to ruin everything, you know. We all feel like that. So here's the question. What will make us stand our ground? What's going to make us brave? What's going to make us unashamed of the gospel? What's going to put steel in our spine? And the answer is, well, it's twofold, really. First of all, we need to grasp what's at stake. If we're going to be unashamed of the gospel, we need to understand what's at stake. If we're liberal, if we don't believe the gospel, if we doubt what the gospel says, well, obviously we're going to backtrack. No one's going to suffer for something they're not sure of. So we need to be convinced and understand what the gospel's about. But secondly, we need to love the truths of the gospel. If we value and love what people think of us, if we value our reputation, if we value our comfort more than the gospel, we'll backtrack. We'll be ashamed of it. Look what Paul says in verse 16. For I am not ashamed of the gospel. I'm not ashamed of the gospel. Paul is so clear. He wouldn't be saying that if there wasn't a temptation to be ashamed of the gospel. Look what he says in verse 14. I am under obligation both to Greeks and to barbarians. Paul says, your race, your culture, your tribe doesn't matter to me. I'm not going to be ashamed of the gospel. I'm not going to be ashamed saying, well, the gospel is for this particular race or that particular. Paul says, no, no, no. Whether you're a Greek or a barbarian, which is a bit of an insult, doesn't matter. I'm indebted to all of you with the gospel. Look what he says, both to the wise and to the foolish. The gospel's not for stupid people, and the gospel's not for clever people. It's not for learned people, and it's for everyone. I'm not ashamed of the gospel, and I'm not ashamed of telling all of you the gospel. Verse 15, so I'm eager to preach the gospel to you also who are in Rome. Wow, verse 15 is such bravery. You know how brave you've got to be to say this. I've told you before last week, Rome was the capital of Paul's world. Rome had ruled over 50 million people at the time that Paul wrote this. Rome had the best philosophy, stolen from Greece, yeah. You know, Socrates, Plato, Aristotle, stolen from Greece, but developed in Rome, you know, and so much philosophy. It had the best science, it had the best progress, it had the best culture, it had the best laws, it had the best art, best wealth, best power. And along comes Paul and says, I'm going to preach the gospel to you. I got something you need. It's so brave. Little Paul, country bumpkin, coming to Rome to preach the gospel. You know, Friday was my anniversary of arriving in Australia. Naomi and I, we've been here 11 years. And obviously you think back, you know, I remember when I first arrived in Australia. First couple of weeks was so disorientating. And one day we went with, because the kids were little then, 11 years ago, we went to King's Park. And we're sitting up at King's Park, you know. Now listen, it's just manicured lawn. It's very, very, very first world. And you sit there and there's that there's the tree that the Queen planted, you know. And then, you know, there's those memorial gardens and the eternal flame. And then down, you look down and there's a massive Aussie flag. And you look across and there's the Woodside, you know, all these tall buildings of this first world city. It's very huge. And there's a river and there's people with jet skis and boats. There's so much wealth. There's so much culture. You know, it goes a helicopter. And you know what I started to feel? Intimidated. You know, I'm just a little surfer beach bum. You know, I've got no background. I'm from Africa, from a town none of you have heard of called Banana Beach. I mean, really? You know, and that's true. And there I sit. You know, it's so impressive. I look at that, I think, Dwayne, these people don't need what you've got to say. I was intimidated. You know, I was frightened. And you know, sometimes I still feel like that sometimes, you know, between when I wake up and go to sleep. I still feel that way. So North Coast Church, at Advance Sunday, how are we this year going to be unashamed to tell the gospel? How are we going to do it? Another year of hard slog. Are you ready for it? Another year, really? Like the other year? Like the year before? Some of you this year are going to be serving in teams. Why are you going to do it? Aren't you going to get bored by next week? Many of you are going to give your money. And there's pledge forms today that we owe $3.8 million on this building. Is it worth it? We're going to give our money again. You know, I've been giving my money to this church for like years. Is it worth it? Some of you are in growth groups. Oh, you know, growth groups are starting soon. Every night, one night of the week, you know. How? I know. Why don't we take 2020 off? Let's have a holiday this year. Look around. Can you see there's enough people? We've got enough people here. We don't need more. We should put a sign outside. We're full. Financially, we're not killing it. But hey, you know, we're paying salaries and we're paying the mortgage just. We're scraping through. Why don't we just maintain? Let's not do anything new. Let's just, why? Let me tell you why. Paul's going to tell us why. Have a look at this. Four reasons why. Because the gospel is the saving power of God for everyone who believes. For in the gospel, God's righteousness is revealed that gives life to people under God's wrath. If you get that, if you understand what's at stake, and if it grabs your heart and you value that more than anything else, I think you will be unashamed of the gospel. You will give yourself to it this year with your brothers and sisters. Let's look at it quickly. First of all, the gospel is the saving power of God. Look at verse 16. For I am not ashamed of the gospel. Why, Paul? For it is the power of God for salvation. The gospel is God's saving power. The gospel is not just the potential to save. You know, the gospel makes salvation possible. Not true. The gospel is the actuality of God's power. The gospel actually saves people. It is God's power to save people. Where do you see God's power? Where do you see God's power? Do you see God's power in miracles? Not really. I mean, yeah, that's pretty impressive. That's not God's power. Do you see God's power in nature? Have you seen the cyclone that's heading up north? Is that a display of God's power? A little bit. It is in the gospel of Jesus Christ. When you see people being saved, that's the power of God. Now, why is Paul saying, I'm not ashamed of the gospel? It is the power of God for salvation. Why is he saying this? Because it looks unimpressive. You're sitting here this morning quietly. Hopefully you're still listening. And there's a dude speaking, teaching the Bible. It just looks so utterly unimpressive. Why doesn't he bring a rabbit out of his pocket? That would be impressive. This looks unimpressive. The gospel looks unimpressive. But it is the saving power of God. Imagine for a moment you've got a little tinny. You got this tiny little tinny from the 1960s inherited from your grandfather. It's a tiny little thing. It leaks. Every time you go out to sea, you have to bail out liters of water. It's old. It's rusting. The paint's long gone. You know, it's got a tiny little 13.5 HP motor on the back. And every time you start it, it's a half an hour's exercise. And when it starts, it's just smoke chugging out the back. You know, the environmentalists have asked you not to use it. And, you know, every time you launch, it's just, but you love this little thing. You've called it the SS Dignity because you love your little tinny. And every time you launch it, so uncomfortable. You go to Hillary's and you're reversing this little pile of metal, you know, and next to you is the 16-wheeler trailer. And other people are launching on these, well, they're just short of oil tankers, you know. They've got cabins and air conditioners, you know, and there's babes in bikinis, you know, you can't even fit someone on your tinny, you know, and they just look at you with their condescending sneer, you know, how long before they have to rescue you? And then out you go to sea, and there you are feeding pufferfish, because that's all you do in Perth. And so you're feeding your pufferfish merrily, mostly to get away from the wife and all that sort of thing. And you suddenly hear, help, help. And you look out, and there's a dude treading water in the middle of the ocean. Later you learn he's a, you know, beginner kite surfer who got blown out of sea, but whatever. You know, now what do you do at that point in your unimpressive tinny? Well, what you could do is, oh no, this is embarrassing. This is so awkward. What will he think of my boat? Oh, I should have tidied it. I should have painted it. Oh no, there's no way. If I had a big thing, I'd rescue him. But there's no way. So, you know, I'll just look away and hopefully he'll drown quietly, you know, while I'm not looking. The gospel looks like a tinny. Even now, people on the beach are thinking, what are they doing? They're listening to some South African going off. It looks unimpressive. But actually, that tinny will save that guy like that. The gospel is the power of God. And I want to share something with you. God has designed the gospel to look unimpressive. It's deliberate because it's hidden from the wise and the proud. We've got a couple of verses here, but I do want to take you through them quickly. Listen to this. For the word of the cross is folly to those who are perishing. But to us who are being saved, it is the power of God. When you go to that drowning guy and you haul him onto your tinny, do you really think as he splutters onto your deck, he's going to go, oh, dude, couldn't you have rescued me in a better boat than this? Do you really think that? He's going to love your tinny. He's going to want to frame it. To us who are being saved, it's the power of God. For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise. The discerning of the discerning I will thwart. Carry on. Where is the one who is wise? Where's the scribe? Where's the debate of this age? Folks, where are the clever people? Where are the clever people? What has the ABC media done to save people? Where are the clever elite? Where are the philosophers? Who have they saved lately? Where are the problems of the world being fixed? Has God not made foolish the wisdom of the world? For since in the wisdom of God, the world did not know God through wisdom, it pleased God through the folly, the unimpressiveness of what we preach to save those who believe. Look at the next verse. For Jews demand signs. Don't you think God could have made all his preachers levitate if he wanted to? Greeks seek wisdom. But we preach Christ crucified, a stumbling block to Jews and folly to the Gentiles. But to those who are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ, the power of God and the wisdom of God. Here's why. If I may say this respectfully, it's almost as if God is showing off. For the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men. The gospel looks unimpressive, but it's the power of God. Paul says, I'm not ashamed of the gospel. Folks, look around this building. Just look. How much power? Wow, that's so bright. Look at that light. How much power do you think we're using right now? Hot water making coffee over there. Lights everywhere. A clicker that I can't operate. You know, PowerPoint. Air conditioner, I can hear it. How much, children next door, how much power is in this building? Now, if you didn't know electricity, and I took you around the back, through the restaurant to the back there, you will see that all this power comes through a little cable. You wouldn't believe it. You would go, no ways, all of this is coming through that. And here's the worst thing. If I cut that cable, everything stops. There's no more power in this building. The gospel of Jesus Christ is God's power for salvation. Look around this building. Every person here has been touched by what? By what? By the gospel of Jesus Christ. Look around you. Lives have been changed. You're looking at a recycled surfer. The gospel has a... Look at the power on display. Look around you. The gospel has done it. And if you, like the good old archbishop, cut off the gospel, if you're ashamed of the gospel, the power goes out. And the Anglican Church is dying. Not at a steady rate of knots, increasingly faster, and is emptying. Soon he'll be alone with his hat. The gospel is the power of God for salvation. Second thing, why are we unafraid to tell the gospel? It's for everyone who believes. Look at verse 16. I'm not ashamed of the gospel. It's the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes. This is good news. I hope you hear this as good news. You know why it's good news? All you have to do is believe. Really? Yes. This shows God's power. Because in the gospel, God does all the heavy lifting. God does the heavy lifting, and what do you have to do? Just believe. Just rely on it. Just accept it. The gospel shows God's power because what's left for us to do is nothing but believe. Imagine if God says, I only save the strong. That would show he's got limited power. Or God says this, I only help those who help themselves. Well, that means God hasn't got a lot of power. You have to be strong too. Or what about this? I only save clever people. Wow, well, then which South African? You know, no. I mean, but what does that say about God's power? The fact of the matter is, God's power is on display because all we have to do is believe it, receive it, trust it. You know, as a lifeguard, you have to be a very good lifeguard to save someone. You know, if you save someone who's strong, right, you swim out to them with your little yellow boy, and they're in trouble, but they're still there. You can say, hang on to this. And they've got the strength to hang on. Or you can swim out to someone, and actually they're good swimmers, they're just clueless about the ocean. And you say, mate, keep swimming, but now you're going to follow me. We're going to actually go out to sea. And then we're going to swim around. And okay, are you all right? Yes, I'll swim. It's not bad. But if you swim out to someone and they're a dead weight, they're finished, you better be a very good lifesaver because you're going to do all the work. The gospel is the power of God for salvation because it's for people who can't do anything. They have to just believe. God saves useless people. God saves people who can't help themselves. And so we just left to trust him. There's no discrimination at North Coast Church because the gospel is for everyone who believes. There's no one too heterosexual for North Coast Church. There's no one too homosexual for North Coast Church. There's no one too damaged for North Coast Church. There's no one too evil for North Coast Church because the gospel is the power of God to save anyone who believes. No one proud will ever be saved by the gospel. All we have to do is believe it and rely on it. And once you trust the gospel, and once you, let me show you the power of the gospel. It doesn't just save you. It grows you. You never move from it. You never go beyond it. Once you have faith in the gospel, that's all you ever have. Look at verse 17. For in it the righteousness of God is revealed from faith, for faith, as it is written, the righteous shall live by faith. It's faith at the start, it's faith in the middle, and it's faith at the end. It's always just trusting the gospel. It's such power that you never move on from it. The way into the Christian life is the way on in the Christian life. It's always believing the gospel, which is why every Sunday we preach the gospel from all of Scripture. Why? Because that's what mature Christians need, and that's what non-Christians need. It's the same gospel that will save you and grow you. So how does the gospel save us? I'll show you. The gospel is the saving power of God for everyone who believes. Here's number 3. 4. In the gospel, God's righteousness is revealed. Now, look at verse 16 and 17. I am not ashamed of the gospel. It is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first, also to the Greek. For in it, the righteousness of God is revealed. Now, folks, I haven't told you yet, but verse 16 and 17 is the thesis which the whole letter of Romans unpacks. So this morning, don't worry. I'm not going to unpack the whole thing. We will get to it as we go along. Actually, if you're in a growth group, you're going to get a bonus this week. Because I've written up a table of the righteousness of God for you in the growth groups. And you're going to explore it together in the growth groups. But for today, I just want to show you that the gospel reveals God's righteousness. There's a lot more, and we'll unpack it as we go along. But the whole letter to Romans is about the righteousness of God. The letter to Romans begins with our lack of righteousness. And it spends 3 chapters showing you and me that we're not as righteous as we think we are. Then it shows us God's provision of righteousness, how God gives us the very thing we don't have, righteousness. Then it shows us the benefits of righteousness and all the things that come with being righteous. Then it shows how righteousness fixes the whole world and answers to all the problems of the world. Then it shows us how God is righteous to give us his righteousness. Then it shows us how those who've been given righteousness live righteous lives. The whole letter. But we'll get to that. Just for today, gospel reveals God's righteousness. Look at it again. Verse 17. For in the gospel, the righteousness of God is revealed. The gospel of Jesus Christ tells me something about God that I would never have known. Something I would never have figured out. The gospel tells me that the God who is there, who I can't see, is righteous. And I would never have known that. Listen, you look at the world. Watch David Attenborough. You look at the world and you will think, whoa, God is powerful. Watch the news. And that cyclone heading up towards Karatha. So you look at that. You think, wow, God is powerful. Or if you look at creation, wow, God loves diversity. You look at nature. You know the fires that have gone through the East Coast? I saw a little YouTube clip of the new life springing out of the ashes. That tells me there's life after death. Creation teaches me there's life after death. Or if I look at the world and I see how everything fits together, I realize, wow, God loves order. He's very clever. He's very wise how everything fits together. I look at nature, especially women. I think, wow, God must be beautiful. He must be absolutely amazing. But no matter how much you looked at all of that, you would never know God is righteous. You would never know without the gospel. You would never know that God is a moral being, that there is right and wrong, and that right and wrong matter to God. You can't learn that from animals. You can't learn that from nature. In nature, animals do anything to survive. Murder, rape, the strong exploiting the weak, that's all okay. In nature, rape is fine. In nature, it's so sad that some people want to live like animals. But we're not like that, because the gospel tells us God is above nature, supernature, supernatural. Right and wrong matter. There is right and there is wrong. And it's not just a matter of taste. It's not just a matter of choice. You like Vegemite. I like honey. You like being nice to people. I like killing people. It's just a matter of taste. Really, it's a choice. It's a preference, you know? Not so. One is right and one is wrong. And God alone decides what is good and what is bad, and what is right and what is wrong. God is righteous. And the gospel tells me not only is God righteous, he only ever does what is good. He only ever does what, when I look at nature, I can't see it. When I see a good person get cancer, I'm like, how can that be righteous? I can't see it. But the gospel teaches me that God only does good, and he only does the right thing. And this is good news. Why is it good news? Because it means I can trust God to be good. I can rely on him to keep his promises and do me good. But it's also good news because it tells me evil will lose. Evil will come last. Loki won't win. I was chatting to a guy this week. I won't give you his name. I've known him for a long time. Not a Christian. He went through an ugly divorce. Horrible, horrible. He's very bitter about it. And he's got these two girls. They're 12 and 14 now. And he's lost them because of the... It's ugly. It's horrible. The whole thing. And I was chatting to him. And he was sharing this with me. And I was saying, dude, that's not easy. I'm looking for a way to talk about Jesus, you know. But I'm nowhere. But I'm working there, okay. And he suddenly says to me, well, you know what, Dwayne? Because he knows what I believe. You know what, Dwayne? I'm a fatalist. Shit happens. I thought, and that's it. End of conversation. He lives in a universe where he can only see nature. He doesn't know the gospel. He doesn't know that fate is not driving the bus. A righteous God is driving the bus. But only the gospel can reveal that to you. The downside. What's the downside of the fact that God is righteous? Is that I'm not righteous. The downside is that if God's righteous, oops, I'm not righteous. If all evil is going to be destroyed, what's going to happen to me? If God is perfectly righteous, how will I ever get into heaven? How will I get into heaven if I'm unrighteous? I'm going to be consigned to a place where people are like me. Do you really want to live with yourself forever? I don't want to live with me forever. I'm going to live in a place where I'm unrighteous and everyone around me is unrighteous. There's only unrighteousness. It sounds like hell. The gospel tells me God is righteous. And I'm in big trouble. Look at verse 18. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who by their unrighteousness suppress the truth. We'll look at that verse next week more closely. But the point, though, is that the gospel tells me God is angry with me. That I am unrighteous. He is righteous. And I'm under his wrath all the time. And that's why we come to our final point. Here it is. The gospel is the saving power of God for everyone who believes. For in the gospel, God's righteousness is revealed. And here comes the beautiful news of the gospel that gives life to people under God's wrath. It gives life to people under God's wrath. Look at verse 17. For in the gospel, the righteousness of God is revealed from faith to faith, as it is written. The Bible always said this, the righteous shall live by faith. Who's the person who gets to live? Who gets to live? Well, let me ask you an easier question. Who gets to die? Everybody. Everyone dies. But who will live after that? Who will rise and conquer death? Which one of us here is going to live forever? In a perfect world that God has promised, a world where there's no unrighteousness and perfect righteousness, who will live? The answer is in verse 17. For in it, the righteousness of God is revealed from faith, for faith, as it is written, who will live? The righteous will live by faith. Or another way you can say this is the one who is righteous by faith will live. Doesn't matter which way you take it, the outcome is the same. Only those who have faith in Jesus Christ, who trust in Jesus Christ, will live. This is the power of the gospel. When the righteous God rises to judge, who's going to escape? Who will live? I hope you won't mind if I get a little bit personal here. This was vividly brought home to me many years ago, 94 it was. I was sailing on a yacht from Cape Town to Brazil. And as I was crossing the South Atlantic, I wasn't a Christian, and I was reading the Bible. And as I was reading the Bible, I kept a journal. Those first few weeks crossing the Atlantic were not fun. As regards the Bible, trust me, there was lots of other fun. But as I read the Bible, I had this growing sensation, this realization of my unrighteousness. It was my first impression of biblical Christianity. I looked at the world around me. You know, at times dolphins would come past out there in the abyss. Where the school of dolphin, you might think I'm exaggerating, but I know it's true. Where the school of dolphin is so big, it takes 3 days to pass. You are caught up in the splendor of the ocean. It's just, the creation around you is massive. It's stupendous. The water's so clean, there's shafts of light. You can see, as far as you can see into the water, you just see light going down. You are in the abyss. You are under the expanse of heaven. At night, the stars are so close. You think, because you don't have perspective, that you can touch them because there's nothing. It's just huge. It's massive. And I had the sense that of everything in creation, I'm in big trouble. Whoever made this is massive, and I am unrighteous. And more I started to remember the things I'd done. Oh, the dolphins aren't doing that. I did that. I'm out of sync. I'm in big trouble. My own conscience. And at one moment, I remember praying. It was about 2-3 in the morning because I always loved the night shift. I remember looking up, and it was as if I saw the glory of the dazzling God. And you know what I wanted to do? Jump off the yacht and swim down. I just wanted to get away from him. I was in such massive trouble. And then, at some moment, I got this idea of a man coming between the righteous God and me. And it was Jesus. And when he came between us, he was utterly obliterated, and his blood just shed everywhere. And suddenly I realized he was interposing himself between me and the wrath of the righteous God. Then I realized what saved means. What does it mean to be saved? It means to be, verse 18, saved from God. The gospel is the power of God that saves you from the wrath of God. It is God who is our biggest problem. The gospel of Jesus Christ is a shield from God's wrath. When Jesus Christ hung on that cross, he absorbed the wrath that verse 18 speaks about. The wrath of God is being revealed from heaven. Verse 18, when Jesus hung on that cross, the wrath of God was falling on Jesus. Jesus Christ hung on that cross and took God's wrath for us. And so, how could we ever be ashamed of the gospel? How could little people make us afraid of the gospel? Who can be more afraid of what society thinks than what an angry God thinks? How could you possibly equate the two? The cross of Jesus Christ is the power of God to shield us from the wrath of God. Do you know the Crusaders? Long ago, the Crusaders, superstitious Christians, misguided Christians, they used to paint a cross on their shield, thinking that the cross would protect them. You know, in every stupid horror movie, the priest arrives with his little cross that inevitably gets bent by the demon. It's such superstitious nonsense. But anyway, they would do the same silly thing. They'd have a cross, thinking that the cross will shield you. But you know, bullets will go straight through the cross. Arrows will go straight. It didn't save one of them. The cross is useless as against people. All the cross will do is make people despise you more, hurt you more, make you suffer more. But if you take the cross and you lift it and hold it up this way, it's totally effective. The cross stops the wrath of God. It was designed to shield you, not from people. They can only kill your body. It's designed to shield you from God, who will destroy both your body and your soul when he is angry. The only thing that should ever stand between you and God, it's not your sin, it's the cross of Jesus Christ. The gospel is the power of God for salvation, because in it, God's righteous wrath is revealed, plus his righteousness that he gives to us, which we'll explore as we go along. Plus, it is the power of God, so that those who trust in it will live. Let me show you the power of the gospel. Look on the wall. I know some of you will need to see a chiropractor, but have a look on the wall. We see Jesus Christ standing with crowds of people from Perth and beyond, made alive by his Spirit. How? Through his gospel. How did they get there? How did they get to stand with Jesus? How do sinners, how do people who love themselves get to stand next to the selfless Jesus? The power of the gospel. And for 10,000 years, they'll still be there because of the power of the gospel of Jesus Christ. 2020, North Coast Church, we are going to commit ourselves to relentlessly giving our best to the gospel of Jesus Christ. Come what may, we are unashamed. How we do that is all in the booklet. Hopefully you've all got the little booklet. An Advanced Sunday, we give those out. That will explain as an organization how we commit ourselves to gospel ministry. But individually, you, what can you do? What's your contribution? What's your involvement? Well, I'm not going to tell you, because Matt Malcolm after we've taken just three questions, and then we sing, Matt is going to come up and he's going to show you how there are four things you can do to make a difference for the gospel.